Hello, welcome to Conversations on the Avenue with me, Arslan Mohammed. In this series of podcasts, we engage with artists, curators and critics working in the art scenes in and around the Middle East and the surrounding regions. Today, we're meeting a couple of architects and designers, the Palestinian brothers Elias and Yusuf Anastas, who are behind an intriguing sculpture now installed in Al-Sakal Avenue's concrete exhibition venue. It's called While We Wait, and it's here in Dubai as part of its global tour, which started at the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, who commissioned the piece as part of the London Design Festival, before it travelled to Dubai as part of Dubai Design Week, on its way to its permanent home in the Cremeson Valley near Bethlehem, where it'll be situated in a tranquil outdoor setting, near a monastery, in the shadow of the Israeli Separation Wall. So, While We Wait is a fir cone-shaped stone structure. It comprises precision-cut stone quarried from three locations across Palestine. It uses a combination of traditional and current methods. Elias and Yusuf assemble the piece to reflect the age-old artisanal building techniques in Palestine, or stereotomy, the art of cutting stones for assembly. At one time, around the time of the Ottomans, it was actually mandatory for new buildings in Palestine to use just stone. But these days, it tends to be concrete with stone facades. So when you see While We Wait, what you're going to see is a lattice-like structure, which in its repetitive lozenge-like pattern ever so slightly reminds me of the Jean Nouvel canopy at the new Louvre in Abu Dhabi. It gently curves upwards, and you'll notice how the stone lightens as you look upwards from deep red at the bottom to pale luminous ivory towards the apex. You can really visualise this in the countryside near Bethlehem, where it's destined. There's a sort of meditative and peaceful ambience about the work. You can move around it, stand inside it, and absorb the atmosphere with the evocative sound elements that are part of the installation. It's a very peaceful, very profound symbol of identity, tranquility, and permanence, inspired by a traumatised landscape. So, as the piece came to Dubai, I met up with the designers, Elias and Yusuf Anastas, and the V&A curator responsible for commissioning and overseeing the project, Salma Tukan. We all squeezed into a room in the middle of concrete, and this is what we talked about.
So on the left of me is Yusuf Anastas, and on the right of me is Elias, his brother, his older brother. People think they're twins, but they're not. And they are architects and designers based between Bethlehem and Paris. And I came across their work a few years ago when I was taking a research trip to Palestine. I had been traveling to Ramallah, to Jerusalem, and in Bethlehem I'd been asking a lot of people if they could recommend designers or architects who were working in interesting ways. And actually a mutual friend told me about their work, and we had sort of bombarded them and came into the studio and was really intrigued by the way that they worked and the research they focused on.
What sort of things were they doing when you saw them, when you first encountered them?
Well, you had a project in Paris. It was the installation you were working on in Paris. But it was then the Stone Matters project that really intrigued me.
Could you maybe tell me a little bit about what it was that really snagged your attention about the way they work?
Well, so I think in terms of the process for LDF, just to kind of situate it a little bit, is that I work full-time at the V&A, and obviously design is a big component of what we do. So for me, working in the region, commuting between art and design, what I found is that there are far fewer opportunities for Arab designers to work with institutions and to engage in large publics, work in public domain, but also to work in a way to sort of develop their practice more conceptually and have fewer issues in terms of commercial pressures placed on them. So in a way, the platform of working and commissioning something for the London Design Festival felt even more urgent. A year ago, I approached about six designers across Palestine, Jordan, Saudi, and Lebanon. I mean, all of the designers came back with proposals. And I think Elias and Yusuf's was fascinating because it was so multi-layered. It drew on the sort of research they've been doing on the know-how, cultural know-how of this material, really embedded in research. There was a practical component of it as well. It had a lovely relationship and poetic sort of symbolic notion behind it, and it relates it very well to some of the ideas behind the V&A.
I think it's time now we meet Ilyas and Yusuf. And okay, guys, can you first introduce yourselves to us?
So I'm Yusuf Anastas. I'm an architect, and I'm a civil engineer as well. I work between Bethlehem and Paris.
Hi, I'm Ilyas Anastas. I'm an architect, and I'm as well based between Bethlehem and Paris. And we are with Yusuf partners in our architectural studio, which deals with public buildings, but as well with research projects and the production of industrial design.
Okay, and the project you have here in Dubai is called While We Wait. We'll get into the specifics of the process, of the themes behind it, and to me what's very interesting is the way you work with stone and the symbolism of that. But first of all, I'd like to ask you, why is it called Why We Wait?
That's a great question, because they have been repeating this quote in the 30 catalogs they signed yesterday. So
should I read the catalog instead? You guys are like, oh, not this question now.
The project actually articulates two different poles of research. One, the first one is linked to our actual research on stone and how to replace stone as one of the noble materials in construction in Palestine. So there's this technical aspect and the research on material. But the other one is inspired by the Kremizan Valley, which is one of the natural resources we have on the western extremity of Bethlehem. And in this specific area, there's currently a threat of losing this whole inherited landscape.
Just tell us briefly what is happening there at the moment in the Kremizan Valley, because that's in the shadow of the wall, isn't it, of the partition wall. And there's also a monastery there as well. So can you just fill in a little bit of background for us as to the significance of this particular location?
So the Kremizan Valley hosts actually a monastery from the 18th century, and it's currently being threatened to be completely cut from the city through the passage of the wall. The local community of the Kremizan Valley and the monks of the monastery started a very interesting form of protest 3 years ago. They gather weekly on Fridays, and they meditate around landscape, protesting the passage of the wall. And it's a form of, it's a very interesting form of manifestation on the way of attributing and investigating the ways of investing the landscape. So basically, one of the leaders of these gatherings, Monsignor Michel Sabah from Jerusalem, once delivered a speech, and he said they raised double walls, one wall on the ground and a wall in their hearts. One day the wall on the ground will collapse, and the wall in their hearts will crumble
too.
While we wait.
Okay, so that's where it comes from. Yusuf, do you want to talk also about Kremizan?
Yeah. So actually, the Palestinian city is historically composed of a sort of a dense urban nucleus and a surrounding landscape that are kept free as a way of preserving nature and the landscape. And so these two elements work together conditionally. So and so this sort of model has been progressively disappearing ever since urban authority has been put in place in Palestine. And this started back at the period of the Ottoman Empire. And so today we reach a sort of paroxysm in this transfiguration of this model, where landscape is being transfigured and destroyed by a race to urbanize, and also with a sort of different claim over nature that is actually expanding and becoming a threat to the natural environment. And the Kremizan Valley is an extreme example of this transfiguration of the model, because it's on the western part of Bethlehem, and it's the separation wall is currently built and will separate the valley in two parts. The last part of the wall, so you can see the wall from one side and from the other, and the connection between the two sides, the two extremities, the two ends of the wall.
So now we come to this project you've created here. So inspired by this situation, inspired by your extensive research using stone as a material and the specificity of stone coming from the land. Could you tell me how you came up with the particular design we have here? What informed this decision? How you got to the particular structure, the form, the interlocking shapes, and so on?
So we have been working on a research project involving stone. In the beginning, it was a sort of a reaction to a sort of a law that we inherited in Palestine from the Ottoman Empire, which forces everyone to build everything with stone. And actually, the Ottomans have put in place a law for stone quarries. They created a tax for stone quarries, and at the same time, they created this law that forces everyone to build with stone.
So since the Ottoman era, everybody in Palestine had to build using stone.
Yeah, the problem is that until the beginning of last century, stone was used as a structural material. Today we're building everything out of concrete and cladding everything with stone. And this is a general tendency that is more universal, and you can find this case anywhere in the world, but it's even more striking in Palestine because of the number of stone quarries we have, and because of the if we take into account the techniques and the local know-how we had for stone construction, we had like workers that were specialized in vault constructions, and so in Palestine the typology of the vault is really everywhere in the common architectural language. And so this know-how has been completely erased. Yeah, and this goes hand in hand with the change in the use of stone. But if you go back to the stereotomy, which is the way of cutting stones in certain shapes in order to assemble them in larger configurations, stereotomy has at least the first witness we know historically of stereotomy is in Syria. And stereotomy has been re-imported by the Crusaders in the region, so it's a sort of a indigenous imported know-how, so it's a sort of a mix of know-hows through time.
Why did you arrive at this particular form?
So the global shape of so we tried to work in a sort of a back-and-forth procedure between the global shape and the shape of the element itself. So the way it's assembled and the implication it has on the global shape. The global shape is approximately 4.5 meters high, and it's 3.5 meters long and 2 meters wide. It's made out of 600 elements of stone that interlock and that are mutually supported, meaning that if you remove one of the elements, the structure might collapse.
So they're not secured in place. They're just balanced on they're balanced on each other, interlocking this way, holding each other together.
Yeah.
Which I imagine is a very symbolic statement. You know, like you said, you remove one, and the whole thing comes tumbling down.
Yeah. So there was that sort of relation between the way the structure behaves in sort of a technical, completely technical aspect, and the way it is inserted into the natural landscape, and playing with this relation with the surrounding landscape, with the nature, and also in contrast with this violence of the transfiguration of the natural environment.
So I've seen projects where you've created something which has a specific function, like a shelter, and then you're working here where you have a piece which is defined by an ideology, by ideas, by concepts. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I was just wondering, kind of in general, if you could talk a little bit about how you approach these very different ways of working.
The difference is we try not to exclusively work on the technical aspect of the, even though the research on stone has some technical aspects, we try not to exclusively focus on these when we create a project. So for example, for the El Atlal artist residency, it's a sort of a first prototype that is still under testing. For this project, while we wait, the idea was to work more on the relation between architecture and nature, and to create a sort of an architecture of relations. Disregarding the technical aspect, it's mainly a project about the relation between architecture and nature, which is disappearing from the content of the Palestinian city.
And the pair of you have been working now with stone for quite a long time. I believe, as Salma mentioned, you had a project called Stone Matters.
Stone Matters is a research that we started in 2013, focusing on using stereotomy as a vector of reusing stone as a noble material in construction and in contemporary architecture. And in the we were fortunate to have this partnership with the Al Atlal Residency.
So in order, which residency?
Al Atlal.
Yes.
So this residency that is a young initiative happening in Jericho. And the idea is to explore the outcome of the research in order to generate a set of different vaulted spaces that would somehow illustrate the fact of how we could actually link the scale of technique in construction in order to obtain different typological forms in the city, and how the urban form in the city is linked actually to the technique.
Well, the stone that you've used in this sculpture comes from all across Palestine. And you can see that because you've put the colours in such a way that it fades upwards. Can you talk a little bit about this, how you find different types of stone in different regions and what that means to you in this sculpture?
So basically, yeah, we worked with the three different stone quarried from Hebron, Bethlehem, and Beit Fajar is a region between Bethlehem and Hebron. Okay, Jerusalem. So Jerusalem, yeah. Hebron, and Bethlehem.
And each of these stones have their own properties. I mean, some are more paper. Maybe softer and porous, others are harder. Did you find anything like that?
Yeah, sure. They're all limestone, but gradually, for example, the stone we had from Jerusalem is a stone that had very high technical properties. It's something that is very similar to the marble that you have in Italy. And we worked as well on the different colors used in order to somehow anchor the structure in its natural landscape in the Cremizan Valley. So we started stratas of red stone going on the top with white, somehow linking a sort of creating a link between the red color of the initial stones with the color of the soil.
So you had to figure out a way of making this transition from red up to white. And I really love the idea that this is Palestine. This is literally the land that you've used. You've actually used the fabric of the land and created in such a way that you have the whole spectrum in the work, like say from deep red up to white. And was that something that you knew that you wanted to do beforehand, or as you were doing this, did this...
I think these ideas sort of developed over the process. I mean, including the form of it when you were asking about why it took, for example, that tower shape. That also was just a sort of a development of different ideas, and the link also conceptually with it, the sort of curve of the stones that were then used and how it might mirror also the natural curve in the landscapes were ideas that were sort of developed over time throughout the process.
That's interesting. So I imagine you guys were talking, having conversations, very closely collaborating throughout this. I mean, what do you remember of this process? I mean,
fatigue. No, I mean, I think it's been really lovely. It's been a sort of a 3-person team working consistently on it. It's been a labor of love, actually. You know, all of us have worked on this for the last 9 months. Another thing that was sort of added and sort of developed throughout the process was the other collaborators within the project. So we worked very closely with a photographer and filmmaker called Michaela Burstow from the inception, and Todd Abushi, who's a sound artist and musician, who actually performed yesterday for the opening night. And those were components of it that ended up becoming very essential to the project. So, yeah, I mean, it's including actually the idea of bringing it to the Middle East, which became more and more pressing in our perspectives. And then it was always meant to be part of the, you know, inserted and born in the V&A. And then, you know, adapting into much more of a sort of functional, used, lived, worn object by the community and by nature when it goes to the valley. But as the project progressed, we realized that actually it would acquire a very different notion, bringing it to somewhere in the Middle East and trying to find the right sort of site for that. So,
you mentioned something earlier, which I would like to hear some more about, stereotomy. It sounds like a very painful medical procedure, but I understand it. It's the process of working with stone, with cutting stone.
I think stereotomy is a complicated word to say something simple. So it's just the way you cut a stone in the aim of assembling it to other stones, neighboring stones, to form a global geometry. So if you think of a lintel, for example, the way you cut the stones with certain angles in order to complete the geometry of the lintel is also a form of stereotomy. We realized that some of these techniques are also linked to urban morphology and to the way city is the city is made. So if you for example in Palestine, you can find in some particular and specific places details of stone stereotomy that have implication on the immediate architecture in which it is included.
In which way?
In the way that the way the stones are cut and built one next to each other, they create a sort of a space that has a particular shape and in a particular form that is also linked to the capacities we had at the time this house or this building was built to cut the stones in a certain way. So the technique is completely linked to the to the form of the house or the building, and so certain typologies are created according to the capacities of the techniques and the tools available.
Because, like you mentioned now, the techniques you can discern by looking when it was done. So you can see that this was done in a certain period or a certain era. And when I was reading about the project that you'd done, I was very interested to see that you use the latest, most technologically advanced methods, and then you also reference traditional ancient methods, and you sort of bring the two together. Could you sort of expand on that a little bit for me? I mean, how did that work, using very up-to-date methods and then referencing much more older techniques and stereotomies?
I think what's really interesting is that in Palestine there's a very strong link between Palestinians and stone, and it comes from the fact that we are very much anchored in the land, and as stone is extracted from the land, it somehow generates this very emotional link. So basically, yeah, the stereotomy in this very particular project is inspired by a specific lintel that we found in the historic center of Bethlehem. And so basically we try to develop algorithms that are somehow generate stability for the overall structure to the form. Yeah, just to mention the form or the stereotomy obtained for the project is so it's dictated by this algorithm, but it's as well inspired by the different curved and organic shapes that we found, that we can see actually in the Kremzan Valley. And it's the overall shape of the structure is as well. We wanted something that didn't have any edges, something that flow very. I mean, would marry easily the different shapes of the natural landscape of the Kremzan Valley, and it would act sort of like a sort of a stone dentelle curtain in the middle of the valley, and generating this transparency and porosity through the different penetrations.
To your question about modern and traditional techniques, I think the idea is not to fall in the trap of nostalgic and romantic ways of folklore, and but we're more interested in the way we try to use the available techniques to other to create results that are different from those that were initially imagined. So for example, for the stone structure here, we worked with several factories, and those factories have the have some tools that they use for other purposes. So they actually mainly produce elements of stone that are replicas of Corinthian capitals and columns, and that they sell to nostalgic clients.
So very ornate and decorative.
Yeah, exactly. So we use those same tools to create structures that that highlight the physical capacities of stone. Mm.
So, Salman, you mentioned it just now, and this leads on from what you're saying, but the artisans and the factories you work with, could you talk a little bit about the people that were involved with this project along the way in helping fabricate the sculpture?
I mean, I wasn't working personally with sort of the factories on the ground, so maybe it's better for you guys to answer that. But I was sort of referring to alongside, I don't know whether you had read, but alongside their architectural practice, they also have a brand under the name of Local Industries, which also plays on some of what you mentioned. So I thought it might be useful to talk about it.
Local Industries. Yeah. Okay.
Yes. I think our practice is very much linked to makers. So we started a few years ago in 2013 a network that we call Local Industries, in which we collaborate very intimately with artisans. It started with the project of a music conservatory that we built in Bethlehem, where we had a very limited budget for the furniture, and we decided to work with all the artisans involved in the building to generate a whole collection of furniture for the building that would fit into the budget that we had at the time. And we found that actually this relationship on a daily basis changed completely our way of thinking space and even architecture, because working on a chair, for example, and details of assembly or even perception of material had an implication on how we perceive architecture. So we decided to maintain this this network and nourish this activity with artisans through our architectural practice and research on material as well. So in the frame of the World Weight project, we worked with two different factories, and the work relied on novel experimental techniques, but as well on the know-how and the capabilities of the local artisans.
So this was very much part of the creative process, almost the what they could offer you, in terms of their know-how, their skills, really contributed to the final outcome.
Yes, definitely. For example, for the friction and the how to smoothen up the surfaces and how to take into consideration the precision of the machines was something that we experimented with them and tried to find the middle grounds in order to generate the stability of the overall structure.
You mentioned just now music, and music is obviously a big part of this installation here. Can you talk a little bit about the music and tell me who's behind it and why actually you felt that music would be integral to the finished work?
So initially at the V&A, we wanted to have sort of an immersive experience within the daylit gallery, and we found two components that would help the visitors to envision the whole landscape around the Crimson Valley while seeing the structure at the gallery. So we worked with a sound artist from Ramallah, Tariq Abushi, who spent a few days in the valley and tried to capture different layers of sound.
Inspired again directly from the valley.
Yes. And he worked along with Michaela Busto, who put together a sort of a film showing as well the different layers of the valley, its direct context, and as well its neighboring landscapes that are evolving very quickly with the passage of the wall, with the settlements, with the Palestinian villages around, and the monastery.
Okay, well, I think that's pretty much everything. And I'd just like to thank all three of you for taking the time to answer our questions today, and for coming to Dubai and being here, and all the best with the project as it continues its journey around the Middle East and ultimately back to the Crimson Valley.
Thank you.
That was Elias and Yusuf Anastas in conversation with me and the curator Salma Tukan at Concrete in Dubai. And While We Wait is on show at the Askalwa Avenue venue until November the 18th, so don't miss it. Thanks again to the guys and to Salma and everyone at Askalwa Avenue for making this interview happen. And from me, Arsene Mohammed, it's also time to say goodbye and see you next time. Bye.